This episode is brought to you by Diageo Bar Academy. Learn more at DiageoBarAcademy.com. That's D-I-A-G-E-O BarAcademy.com.
World Central Kitchen is serving thousands of fresh meals to Ukrainian families fleeing home, as well as people remaining in the country. This week on Let's Talk About Food, host Louisa Kasdan spoke with Henry Patterson about his upcoming relief trip.
So you're going to Poland, and I think you told me you're going to be there for at least 2 weeks.
I'm going to Poland to help feed Ukrainian refugees. With Jose Andreas's World Central Kitchen, I decided that's what I wanted to do for my 70th birthday. I leave in just a few days. We all see that what the Russians are doing is contemptible. As a food person, we all love to help. It's in our DNA. And here are people who really need our help. So if you want to help the Ukrainian refugees, either with money or even your hands and heart, find hashtag Chefs for Ukraine and World Central Kitchen. We have to do something. We can help. Remember hashtag Chefs for Ukraine.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
I'm Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Guys, we're all back in the same room together for the first time in 4 weeks. I haven't been on the show. I'm sorry.
Yeah. What have you been up to?
I was in San Diego. Bruce, my head bartender, Demore Margo, and who used to work at Polite Provisions, and I went out and took over Polite Provisions for a night, and it was a blast. But the hotel that I was staying in simply didn't have enough Wi-Fi strength for me to get my rig up and running for the show, which sucked. And then the 2 weeks before that were just scheduling conflicts because I'm just insanely busy with we have now 10 locations in the East Village, different properties under Overthrow Hospitality's banner. And that's great to have all those spots that are so close to one another so we can rely on each other and help each other out when we need things, like if an ice machine breaks or if you run out of Seafull towels or need a box of lemons, whatever. So we decided to open two more, one in Boulder and one in L.A., thousands of miles apart.
Wow.
And thousands of miles from our locations. that's really logistically become quite a challenge. Neither is open yet. They'll both be open, sadly, at the kind of the same time. We had planned for Boulder to be open sooner and then LA to be second. But of course, construction woes and things like that are slowing Boulder down. And for whatever reason, the opposite is happening in LA. Things are moving faster than expected. So it looks likely that they're just going to line up and open at the same time.
Wow, that's crazy.
Can you talk about like the concepts that you're doing for those yet? Or is this still hush-hush?
We've never subscribed to that. I personally have never subscribed to that either. That whole like, let's keep it quiet until we get open. Like, we'll just bang the drum and tell you that we're coming so you get excited for us to be here. Our sort of, I don't like to use these terms. I don't think we're big enough to use them, but I don't know what else to say. Our sort of flagship restaurant in our group is called Avant Garden. And the one, the only one that exists currently is here in New York. It's tiny, 32 seats, but it's really a dynamo with great food and great service and a great style that we thought we'd replicate. The one here in New York is right next to a church, meaning it can only serve beer and wine. So it has no cocktails there. There's no room to even put a bar to do beer and wine cocktails. So we just pour wine. But the other two we're going to call Avant Garden Bistro. Similar style and ethos. They're both they both seat over 100, and they'll both have full liquor licenses. The LA one won't have it right away, but the Boulder one already has a liquor license, so we're going straight into it. The LA one will grow into one in about 8 months. Avant Garden Bistros coming soon.
Congrats!
Yeah, so very cool. Pretty exciting. Means I'll be doing some traveling to those two parts of the country that I don't necessarily go to very often. Things are moving very quickly.
Nice.
Awesome, man. Yeah, it's finally the year of vacations for you, huh?
Yeah.
Going to take all these trips to Boulder, San Diego, Los Angeles, getting out and about in the world, man.
Here we go. It's
time. You have a private jet yet?
We got the Overthrow Hospitality jet that runs on vegan fuel.
Yep. all corn oil on that one.
Yeah, corn and soybeans.
It's a bus. That's just what it is. Yeah. It's just one of those old hippie buses, but it gets great mileage.
Yeah. Slow and steady wins the race.
Yeah. Speaking of old hippie buses, Damon, tell us about that sweet new whip that we saw on Instagram briefly last week.
Oh, Tesla?
that one, yes.
What a weekend. So for those who don't know, I have an identical twin brother. We both live in Marin County in California nowadays. We both bought Teslas this weekend, the same model, Model 3s, and like neither of us own Teslas anymore. It's kind of an unfortunate thing. So he got in a wreck. Someone ran through a red light, T-boned him. He had the car for 2 days. Jamie, my fiance, and I got a Model 3 as well the day that he got in a wreck. And then we found out that it had all these problems that, like, the car was great. It's just that it had been repaired several times from incidents that it had been in, and they were unreported because the previous owner worked for State Farm Insurance. I don't know if I should say that on air, but
too late now.
Was able to go in and erase all the service records. Super shady.
That's unscrupulous. Yeah. So yeah, that sucks. I'm really glad you found that out though, and that there was no they didn't contest it at all. They just took the car back.
Yeah, they knew that it was a huge oversight, you know. So anyway, we're gonna get another one because I'll tell you, we had it for 24 hours and it was freaking awesome. So we're shopping for another one. But yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Greg.
I think it sounds a little bit off brand for you though. I picture you in your big old sort of muscly truck and a little bit older vehicles and cowboy hats and guitars and.
Yeah, Tesla? Well, no, here's the thing, man. It's all moving in that direction. By 2030, I believe it's 2030, in California, you won't be able to buy a new car that runs on gas, even a hybrid. Everything's got to be electric. And then hopefully, the world falls. I'm not against, I'm very old school, and I still have classic cars and a Harley and all that. But, like, just trying to do some good, you're not a vegan, but you own vegan restaurants. You know what I mean?
Truth. 1,000% true.
No. And I think about this almost the same way I think about like lab grown meat, right? It's like, there's always going to be a place for, people who want to pay a little bit extra for a steak that came from a cow or a pork chop that came from a pig. And I think that's fine. But I think if we can make lab grown meat and electric cars the default, if people like classic cars are beautiful. A gorgeous, medium rare steak is beautiful. And I think that if, you get to a point where people are willing to pay a premium for it, but that's not the thing that's just like, the default thing is the thing that's terrible for the environment. I think that's going to be that will be a great step in the right direction, I think.
Yeah. I'm just trying to use like gasoline more sparingly. I mean, it's like $6 a gallon out here in California now. And, obviously they're talking about it going back down, because of the whole Ukraine thing and, also I drive like at least 100 miles round trip every day going to and from work. So I work out in Napa Valley and I live in Marin. So it's 100 mile at least round trip that I'm doing every day. So it just makes sense to kind of make the switch. And then I can, take my gas guzzling old 69 Ford and, drive it 2 miles to the local bar and back,
Right.
Yeah.
Perfect. It's there to be seen.
Yeah, totally, man. And I just had the engine rebuilt in that. So it's like running like a top. It's great. So maybe slightly more efficient than it was before, but yeah. Anyway.
So what you're saying is you're not going to celebrate National Bike to Work Day this year.
I can't.
Yeah. I knew your commute was long. I just assumed it was traffic. I didn't realize it was a 50 mile one way trip. Holy cow.
But it's a great commute. I mean, I'm just driving through wine country, it's, when I sign on with the organization that I'm with NJ Gallo, they were like, we connected because of the show. Our brand manager, John Chambers, he was, he's listened to the show for years now. And that's how we met. We connected about the California Brandy House. And he was explaining the job to me. And I was like, it sounds like a brand ambassador job. And he's like, it is. But you don't have any sales KPIs and you don't have to get on a plane. And I was like, that sounds great. He's like, you don't even have to go to the city and visit accounts. He's like, all you do is you're going to be driving through wine country like a few days a week. I'm like, I will do this. It's pretty sweet. I don't have a roller bag full of sample bottles. It's I get paid to talk, about something I'm very passionate about, which is California Brandy. It's a very complex spirit, you know. Yeah. And, you know, I know that we're all very much into complex spirits.
Indeed. And speaking of complex spirits, Greg, who's in the virtual studio with us today?
In the virtual studio with us today, we have Philip Duff, spirits educator and on-premise consultant for Liquid Solutions Limited and CGO. That's Chief Geneva Officer, for everyone following along at home, of Old Jeff Geneva. Phil, how you doing, man?
Hey, Greg, what's up? It's been a while, and I think me being here only proves that the pandemic is still with us, because times have become desperate enough that I am back on the speakeasy, which I'm very grateful.
Lean days ahead, my friend, lean days. No, it's good to hear from you. I don't think you used to live around the corner from a place that I was the GM of in 2019 in the Upper East Side. And I'm not sure that I used to see you fairly regularly there. I think this might be the first time that you and I are talking in real time since we shut down for 2 weeks to flatten the curve.
Yeah, I think you're right. And ever since then, you've taken up podcasting with a passion. You now appear to do about 7. I remember your very last day at the Rochard. I think it was a Friday or something. I went in. We had a mezcal, and then I fucked off, and the Rochard no longer exists. And in the interim, we've been landlocked back at home. I escaped out of New Zealand back to New York on St. Patrick's Day 2020,
wow,
which is 42 hours long, and I barely made it back.
Yeah.
Oof.
And now the world is reopening again. I've started my own podcast. I've only done 3 episodes, but I've already had an offer for $1.6 billion from Spotify. Right?
Wow, they really lowballed you on that one,
man. Those offers come and go. Yeah.
I don't know if they're the right people, is what it is.
How do you feel about horse dewormer? That's the real question here.
Well, I think an opinion on that and the ability to cogently discuss jiu-jitsu are a prerequisite. And I did grow up in the countryside, so I can definitely make an opinion about horse dewormer. The rest of it leaves me absolutely cold.
Well, let's talk about your show a little bit, the Philip Duff Show. What's the focus, and what message are you trying to get out there? You're only 3 episodes in, so maybe you haven't really cultivated that yet. But talk to me about what's going on so far.
Yeah, so obviously the world needs another podcast and YouTube show from a middle-aged white guy. It's you've got to give the fans.
The world is really short on experts.
Yeah. And like 2 drinks in, I'll talk about anything. Epidemiology, Ukraine, it doesn't matter. No, what it was, as we were chatting before we went live, Souther, many years ago, inspired by the first person I ever saw do it, St. John Frizzell, noted restaurateur of Gage and Tallner and Fort Defiance in Red Hook, Brooklyn. But before that, he was just St. John Frizzell, who knew everything about Charles H. Baker Jr. He put a great deck that he had given as part of a seminar, Tales of the Cocktails, up on a website called slideshare.net. And back then, you could put your deck up and then record narration. So it was like going to a seminar at a show, but you didn't actually have to go. So this was great. And I used to do that with all my decks. So there's, I don't know, 60, 80 of them up there. And then a few years ago, SlideShare just removed the possibility to record narration and erased all the audio. So all the decks are just kind of there. Right. And it's just, I use them, the visuals, more like flashcards. You know, it's the main thing to do if I'm teaching a seminar is to look at me and listen to me. That's kind of how I have it set up. And it occurred to me, you know what? There's a feature in PowerPoint, believe it or not, Souther, PowerPoint computer program. And you can record narration. You can actually record your PowerPoint with you advancing the slides and narrating it and output it as a video file. So I did that. So I've done it for 3 of my seminars so far. How the Global Drinks Business Works, Geneva History and Mixology, which is the newest one that debuted only last November, and The Joy of Citrus, which was uploaded only today, which is a seminar that I first gave back in 2011 at Manhattan Cocktail Classic, RIP.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa, MCC.
Yeah. And then I thought, well, no sense doing it halfway. I ripped the audio out and started a podcast, which you can see on Spotify and Stitcher. And you should be able to find it on Apple, but I can't find it just yet for the people who listen to the podcasts. What I'm going to do is it'll be a mix. So it'll be essentially the audio for seminars, and I'll try to make them audio friendly so people can listen along and learn about you know, everything from Amalfi lemons to the dark history of rum and Geneva and things like that. But I do want to have people on and interview them and kind of go for a while and go deep. And what I notice is there's a lot of people who don't want to say the things that they would say if the microphone wasn't on. I think you've probably seen a bit of that with the podcast over the years, right?
Yeah.
And then it suddenly goes quiet on this podcast.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I'm just mentally rolling through all the things I probably shouldn't have said on the air. But I'm familiar with this in theory. Yes, please go on.
And by the way, for Speakeasy listeners, there's a special discount this month on State Farm. Enter the code Damon at checkout. That's Damon.
Yeah.
The next person who T-bones you, Damon, might be that guy from State Farm.
Oh, my God.
No, it is like listening to more podcasts in the last 2 years, but it was kind of, my ears pricked up, what was it, about a few months back. There was a soiree at the Drinks Writer, Tony Sachs's place, and I was chatting to Robert Simonson, the other Drinks Writer who was there, and he mentioned something that whenever he spoke to bartenders about drinks companies, like a drinks company that had done something that was like unequivocally dumb, right? Or they produced a product that really shouldn't be aimed at bartenders. It should go straight to consumers, and yet they're trying to do stuff, you know, like Bacardi has that petal and flower vodka for women, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
He would contact bartenders. He knows many, many bartenders all around the world and ask for a quote. And it was like the mafia code of silence. They would never, ever say anything critical. Whereas in the worlds of beer and wine, people are much more self-assured, and they'll say, yeah, that thing that Heineken did sucked, or that thing that, you know, wine company X did was dumb. And he's just, I can't get any quotes out of people for that. So I'd like to have, you know, some real talk, as they say, about the weirder stuff, the stuff that might go above some of our heads, that's influenced by, you know, stock market movements, shareholder pressure, stuff like that. And then just a good old deep dive into different sectors. Like, rum is an insane sector. California brandy is pretty insane right now as well, Damon, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah, for sure. Totally insane. Just so, the Wild West.
So what I'm hearing from you, it sounds to me anyway, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you know, you've been known as a presenter and educator for a long time in our field, and you've stepped away from your role with Tales of the Cocktail. Are you just trying to kind of refill that gap in your life and have an educational outlet?
Well, the thing is, I don't want those seminars to wither on the vine, as it were, and it gives me a chance to come back and update them. Right, because things have changed. You take another pass, you release them for other people in other channels that might not have the chance. Because as we always used to say at Tales of the Cocktail, of all the people who come to Tales of the Cocktail, it's only 10% of the people who want to. Right?
Right.
Everybody, even in England, whether or as far afield as Australia, it's just not a practical thing. In fact, it's not a practical thing for most people to go to London, right? Or Toronto or stuff like that. And especially not now, where people are either still broke because of all the COVID lockdowns, or they're horrendously overworked because of the massive staff shortages in our industry. And my regular gig, which is going around the world, speaking at bar shows, advising drinks companies, especially on-premise, that's picking up again. You know, I was in London a couple of weeks ago. I'm hitting the road again on Friday. I'm going to be in Tel Aviv in May for Tel Aviv Cocktail Week. Mm. So that's coming back. But I guess this is kind of another string to my bow.
Yeah, another way for you to get the information out there, and much more convenient, right? Everything can be you know, accessed online at any time of day from anywhere on the planet. So it really gets you out there. That's pretty cool. I'm excited to tune into your podcast. I wasn't aware until today that you came on and mentioned it to us that it existed. But it's only 3 episodes. How often do you plan to put one out?
I think weekly at first. You know, maybe save up a few. So if I am on the road, I can keep putting them out. Not more than that, because as you know, it's quite a big commitment. And everything, the seminar ones will always have a PowerPoint behind it, a reading list. And, you know, that takes a while. It takes a while to put together. And even if I'm just mining from the archives, and it's a bit like Taylor Swift re-recording her old albums, it does add up.
Yeah, of course. It's a lot of energy and effort on your part. And I, for one, know your work already, so I'm already planning to be impressed by what you put out, and I can't wait to check into it. I'm really interested to check out the update of the seminar you were talking about the drinks business, how the drinks global drinks business works. You've updated it for 2022 with new numbers and new stats, and I'm pretty curious to watch that one.
And also, got to mention this too. You know, that we try to refer to Taylor Swift at least once every week on the show. So thank you for helping us hit that quota. Just want to make sure we acknowledge that, you know.
Yeah.
This one's for all the T-Swift fans out there. No, but I wrote this seminar, and even at Tails, we could not find a single company to sponsor it, because it's about how the company works, about how drinks firms operate, and everyone always bitches about them. They're like, oh, company X has brand Y, and brand Y is my favorite. Insert any brand you like there. It could be Benedictine, it might be Plymouth, whatever, but they never do anything with it. They've got this amazing brand, and I kind of explain in the seminar why they're ignoring it, right? And how the structure of all modern drinks companies was built, how it's a sort of an MBA management consultant-led thing. Everything's scientific, and because everyone wants the corner office, nobody either wants to or is allowed to take any risks anymore.
For sure.
Instead of developing brands like, you know, Bailey's and Tanqueray 10 and the Singleton, all they're doing is waiting for an entrepreneur brand to get to 10,000 cases or 80,000 cases, and then they'll just buy it. And then frequently they'll fuck that up too, right? Mm-hmm. It can be the kiss of death being bought. Just ask anybody who works at 42 Below Vodka.
Right.
Right.
I don't know if we can anymore. But so I guess my question is, how do you get this message out then in a venue? You know, I'm thinking of Tails, but really any, you know, big cocktail festival, cocktail conference, whatever you want to call them, that is so dependent on, like, oh my God, you know, Bacardi is sponsoring this event, or like Tanqueray is sponsoring this event. Like, how do you get something that's kind of a, you know, lift up the log and see what's underneath message out there?
Well, there's always unsponsored seminars, obviously, at all the shows. Sometimes they don't really allow any sponsorship, like at Bar Convent Berlin on the main stage. It has to be, you know, an educational topic. It can't be any kind of a promotion for you, your company, your brand, your clients, anything like that. You can do that in the sort of smaller rooms that they do off the side of it. But, you know, there's a lot of bar shows out there. Some of them will say, hey, you know, we want you to do a vodka seminar with, you know, vodka brand X, probably, you know, some kind of a sponsor. But this permeates the entire drinks industry. I had a column in Drinks International for several years, and every now and then my editor would say, hey, Phil, I want you to do an article on Amaretto. I'd say, right on, great. Gives me an excuse to dive deep into Amaretto, the history of which is wild. You have no idea about the history of Amaretto, and neither did I. But they'll say, oh, and can you interview this person, this person, this person? And it's always brands you have never heard of, right? They've just been created, or they've got a bit of money behind them, and they've committed to an ad in the paper, and that's it. And you kind of have to include them, right? And that wasn't even the worst bit. Sometimes they were very good brands, but you try to get something out of them and it would be like squeezing blood from a stone. I'm like, dude, I'm trying to help you here. Give me a bit of news, you know? Right. Tell me about the time your Tesla got T-boned by the dodgy guy from State Farm. State Farm. Use Damon. Damon.
That's right. Yeah.
So yeah, that it definitely happens. We don't have a separate voice in spirits. We don't have a separate media. Like, there are people who write about wine who are beholden to nobody. You know, they don't care about being hired by the big wine companies. They have columns in newspapers and they work with retailers. They have no special interests. The same is true in beer. We don't really have that. Like, you go see a seminar at Tails, you pay $80 for a ticket, but that ticket is still being subsidized by the brand sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because every seminar is sponsored, and it's the job of the education committees of Tails and ultimately the leadership to make sure that it doesn't get too intrusive. But even if there was no link at all between the sponsors and the people who prepare and teach the seminar, just knowing your seminar is sponsored by, you know, Bally Go Backwards Irish Whiskey, you know, that's going to influence how you teach your Irish whiskey seminar, for instance. And it's just, it's how it goes. But me doing this thing gives me a voice. You know, it's kind of like direct-to-consumer cocktail shipping. People can discover it. They're not sponsored, not at the moment. Although, if anybody wants a sponsor, please contact my... You're going to be in a bidding war against Spotify, unfortunately. Right? So bring your checkbook.
That's the nature of the game.
It is. Yeah, I think so. You guys know better than me. This has to be, I don't know, is this the longest running mixology podcast?
I believe I'd have to get somebody to fact check it, but it seems like we're at least
I think it is, brother. I've been doing it for over 11 years now. You've been on for five now?
Yeah, something like that. Well, my anniversary's in my
car. The show's almost old enough to drive, you know?
Yeah, right? Pretty crazy.
A Tesla.
A Tesla. Yeah. Be sure to contact State Farm. Speaking of sponsors, we should take a quick break and
hear from our own. Sponsors. Yeah.
All right. Be right back in a bit and don't go anywhere.
So, Souther, as we're talking about on today's show, travel is back. Not all the way back, but like it's back enough it's looking like we might actually be able to go to a few conferences this summer.
And I'm looking very forward to going to Tales of the Cocktail, if at all possible. And again, it seems like it's going to be. So very excited.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just nice to be able to get back into a world where, you know, we have the freedom to be able to do this. But I think we also have to be conscious of the fact that not everybody has that freedom, you know, whether or not you are a special case or you're looking out for your health for a particularly, you know, intense reason. If you are after the pandemic totally strapped and don't have the cash to make it to New Orleans, or if after the pandemic you are working your ass off and don't have the time to make it to New Orleans or wherever else the cocktail festival of your dream is happening this summer, we understand the world's a topsy-turvy place. And we all took a big break from it in 2020 and things have changed. But there is one place where people can go that's basically a cocktail conference that's happening 24/7 all the time. What is that, Souther?
Yeah, and it's on demand. It's Diageo Bar Academy online, where you can go and get all sorts of courses. And right now they're offering a few. I just took their new one. It's all about Guinness, called Guinness Essentials. I got it right in time for St. Patrick's Day. I know that was last week, but it was a great course. It only takes about 30 minutes, as all of their new e-learning classes are. And they're, again, on demand. You can do them whenever you want. And the best part is, as you just mentioned, cost prohibitiveness is the number one reason people don't get to go to conferences or take educational courses. And this is absolutely free. I think that's the best part about it.
Yeah, I love it. And I also love that there's, you know, like any good cocktail conference, there are classes for every level of expertise. So whether you're just starting out and want to learn and, you know, this is kind of you dipping your toe into the big, wide, crazy pool of cocktail bartending, or whether you've been doing this for 20 years, there's definitely something there. There's no one who can go here who can see something, who can look at all of it and be like, no, I already know all of this. There's always something new to learn there, which I really appreciate.
1,000% agree. So I would say, if you want to learn more about what Diageo Bar Academy has to offer, go and visit DiageoBarAcademy.com. That's D-I-A-G-E-O BarAcademy.com. Become a member and be sure to opt in for the newsletter. That's the thing that comes once a week and updates you on what other classes are there to be taken. And again, it's all 100% free and on demand. Diageo Bar Academy. There's no greater value.
Hey everyone, I'm Jesse Sparks, host of the new podcast, The One Recipe, from the team behind The Splendid Table. This pod is all about that one recipe that you lean on. The one you share with friends, the one you make when you need a little love, and the one you know will work every single time. Every week, I talk with chefs and gifted cooks from all over the world about their one and the story behind it. We're here to help you build your kitchen library one dish at a time. Follow The One Recipe wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to tell you about HRN's Business Membership Drive. Now, we all know that small businesses keep our communities vibrant. So for $500, HRN will shine a light on your work and will help you sustain our mission to expand the way people think about food and drink. This fundraiser will support not just my show, this show, but the amazing HRN community of food podcasts. And as a thank you for this tax-deductible donation, your business will receive on-air mentions, social media posts, listings on our website, and more. So go to heritageradionetwork.org/biz, that's B-I-Z, to become a business member today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/B-I-Z. Thanks.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. And in the studio today, we have just really a drinks legend. We've got Philip Dupp in the studio again. Which has been great. We've been talking about a lot and nothing at the same time. And we've talked a lot about insurance policies for automobiles that you only own for 24 hours. But no, more importantly, you know, I like that we're talking about this new podcast of yours. And really, I mean, like, I know we're still like, we're in the virtual studio still, but you know, the world is opening back up. So we're going to be able to start going back to Tales of the Cocktail and Bar Comet Berlin and things like that. So, and what you kind of said something earlier that kind of struck a chord with me. You said that like only 10% of the people who go to any of these actually want to be there. Right. But, and you said it's like kind of impractical for a lot of people to get to these seminars as well. I think that's what makes this so important, you know, like the virtual, like your podcast, your decks that you put online for people to peruse, the narration behind them. I mean, it's, you can actually be there without being there. Right. So there's so much information about it too. Like, I mean, I would love to check out the one on the history of Amaretto, because honestly, I know what it is, but I've never really scratched too deep into that story. So I you know, and I like the kind of weird backstories of all these, like, something that's been on the shelf for so long and like ubiquitous to be on every back bar. And then like, I'm like, wait a minute, I guess I don't really know too much about it, but maybe I should. So it's great to have the access to that nowadays, you know, as opposed to even like 11 years ago when this show started, you know, it's just, there's so much more out there. So, and I know that you have a lot of information and a lot of stories and a lot of jokes about it. So I can't wait to check it out, but also, man, one of those spirits is Genever. I mean, it's been around for a really fucking long time, you know? And so why don't you tell us about Old Duff Genever?
Yeah, I mean, I have to be careful here because you could wind up drinking from the fire hose. One of the problems with Genever is there's too much history. And every time I write and talk about it and I do a bit of research, and I teach a seminar or I talk about it somewhere like here, people come up and give me even more information, right? It's like washing your car while it's raining. I was in Sweden recently. I had the first published ads for Genever in Sweden were from the early 1800s. I was interviewed in the two major Irish newspapers in the last month, the Irish Independent, the Irish Times. And I was able to point out there was regular weekly ads for Holland Gin, as it was known, in the Freeman's Journal, a Dublin newspaper, every single week from 1726 on. So, like, it was only a couple of years ago that I learned. We all know about Rip Van Winkle, yeah, the dude who fell asleep and he woke up, but it was 20 years later. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows the story. It was a huge, huge story in, I believe it was 1819, written by Irving Washington. But do you know why he fell asleep?
He was drinking Genever.
Bingo!
You kind of led me to it there, Phil.
Yeah, it would have been weird to know it was Amaretto. Yeah, no. He went out for a drive in his State Farm-insured Tesla. No, he's this henpecked husband who's got a shitty life, and he goes for a walk with his fucking dog one day. And he goes around the corner. He comes into this weird valley full of, as he said, people in old-time clothes, meaning the kind of, you know, the lace-covered black outfits with pantalons that the original Dutch settlers wore when this was the colony, New Amsterdam. And they were unloading barrels of Genever and decanting it into big jugs. And then they were sitting down at picnic tables and drinking them. And he had a couple himself. And that's why Rip Van Winkle fell asleep for 20 years. Like, it's insane. America.
So every time you turn around, you're finding a new interesting tidbit or fact about the category.
Yeah, and I get a lot of the American information, especially being here in New York, because the first distillery in America was a Genever distillery on Staten Island in 1661 or 1663. Wow. John Adams, American president before America was America. The first country that recognized it diplomatically was Holland. He actually lived in Holland for several years, and he went to Schiedam to lobby the Geneva distillers because they were a very powerful lobby. And his son, John Quincy Adams, grew up speaking fluent Dutch. So there's just, it's too much.
Yeah.
It's there's too much information everywhere. Indonesia is the same. Like, because it was a Dutch colony, and may I say, the victim of quite brutal genocide, there's ridiculous amounts of Geneva history there. The oldest message in a bottle ever was found only a couple of years ago off the coast of Perth in Australia. And it was a Geneva bottle, exactly like the rather attractive old Dutch Geneva bottle. No, I mean, it really was. That had been thrown off a boat, an oceanic research vessel in Fiji, 200 years before. And it had survived with the paper record inside it. And it was picked up by this family out for a stroll in Perth, Western Australia, only a couple of years ago. The bottle is for display now in the Geneva Museum. So that's the cross I bear. But, you know, as things go, it could be a lot worse. It's really great owning a Geneva brand. It's really great bringing it out in the world. And I'm particularly stoked about the 100% malt wine Geneva category, which is to say Geneva with no neutral alcohol, because that's what really conquered the world. That's what Jerry Thomas mixed with. That's what led to the building of 392 distilleries in Schiedam near Rotterdam in Holland by 1892. Schiedam is tiny, by the way. It's a village of like 24,000 people. And it's
today.
What led...
That's today.
Oh, yeah, wow. But it wasn't all that much bigger then. It had a lot of distilleries in a small village. Like in the harbor of New York City, per the research of David Wondrich, in 1852, for every one bottle of English gin that was imported, they imported 450 bottles of 100% malt wine Geneva.
Wow.
We launched Old Duff in America back at Kubar in 2017. It was the first time that 100% malt wine Geneva had been sold in America for at least 110 years.
Philip, if the numbers were so astronomically high, one bottle to 450 bottles, how on earth did it slide so far that you know, still at my bars, and I'm sure at Damon's bar as well, you know, our pretty well-educated guests come in and still don't even know what a bottle of Geneva is.
I have two words for you, Souther. State Farm. No, Only kidding. There's four things that put the knife in the back. One was, ironically, dry vermouth. Right, dry vermouth was essentially invented by the Noailles Pratt Company in France, and the Italian Martini Company made their version of it and started selling it in America at the end of the 1800s. It was very popular. Think of Tito's crossed with Fireball and multiplied by rum chata. It was like a hit drink. And the bartenders started mixing it, obviously, with the hot spirits of the day, which include Geneva. But we all know, by the way, that dry Manhattan suck, yes? They suck. Because dry vermouth doesn't mix well with whiskey or whiskey-like spirits like Geneva. So that was one problem. You know, a second problem was World War I, which occurred on and between all the countries that drank Geneva. Holland, Belgium, Germany, France, England. That was not good, as well as the fact that the war itself wiped out a generation of drinkers. Then America kicked off with Prohibition, despite the fact that almost every country in the world had tried Prohibition and failed at it by then. America's like, nah, we're going to give it a go. That cut off a big market. And in general, Americans lost their taste for complex, nuanced, professionally distilled spirits in that time. Most people were not drinking smuggled quality spirits from abroad. They were drinking shallowly distilled, you know, shoddily rectified, nasty stuff. So the bartenders responded by drowning it in juice and soda, right? Robert Hess has described Prohibition for America like a mixological lobotomy. And he's not wrong. So that wasn't great. And just as Prohibition was over, World War II, and it's impossible to describe how horrendous the consequences of World War II were. I lived for 17 years in Rotterdam, which is one of the cities that was absolutely leveled by the Germans during World War II. Mm-hmm. That wiped out generations of drinkers, destroyed the country, destroyed the distilleries. And when they came back, and it's there's a parallel in the world reopening now after COVID, everyone is kind of shaken to their core. They've seen how fragile the world is. And the Dutch began to emphasize much more on what people want. Before, they were kind of like cognac producers, like, we make the best stuff, we're sending it out in the world, you lucky people get to drink it. After World War II, they were like, we got to keep the fucking lights on. So as you see, some of them doubled down on new and interesting things like vodka, right? The Nolet family, who distilled Kettle One, were always Geneva producers. Always, always, always. They doubled down on vodka. Some of them put all the chips on liqueurs, like Bols and De Kuyper. And domestically in Holland, they invented a style of Geneva that had almost no malt in it. So before World War II, Geneva would have something between, let's say, 30 and 100% malt wine in it, right? Or the other way around, it would be between 70 and 0% neutral spirits. After the war, they're like, let's just give this a go. So they start reducing the malt wine percentage, and it gets all the way down to 1 or 2%. So if it's 98% neutral and 2% malt, the Dutch in the 1950s invented vodka, right?
Yeah.
What that means is that before vodka was ever popular in Western Europe, they had something as cheap as vodka, as easy to make as vodka, as neutral as vodka, and it made buckets of money for them for so long, but it almost killed off the real Geneva, which is to say stuff that tastes like Old Dutch Geneva or De Borgen or Bols. And that's why we're the comeback kids now. So we're the victim of, you know, some interesting circumstances, but I don't think there's ever been a better time to drink great Geneva and support a people like you, Souther, like my friends at the Connaught in London and a bar called Gemma in Stockholm. And indeed, just before it all went down in Ukraine, we were about to ship pallets over there because they've got a very vibrant bar community as well. So it's really people who are down to selling interesting spirits, a shot at a time, a cocktail at a time. And we all know that that particular part of the market is booming. So it's a good day to be here.
Sure. And that's an interesting thing to bring up, too. As you mentioned, both the world wars had an impact on the sale of Geneva globally. And even now, as we maybe face a potential third world war, it's having an effect on your sales of Geneva in Ukraine. You and I were at Barometer it was 3 years ago. Numbers are always skewed because of the stupid thing. And we're all watching with impatient breath as we see what's going on with all of our friends over in Kyiv and Ukraine in general. Are you as a company, are you trying to maybe do something to help out with that situation?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a lot of plans to do as much as we can, but really nothing can happen until the war ends. Everything is almost just virtue signaling until then. The best thing that you could do is, you know, donate money, share messages, stay in touch with your Ukrainian friends, of which we have many. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're a tough people. And at the same time, since this is such a big platform, I want to get it out there. I got so many friends in Ukraine. I've been going there for a long time. I've helped wrangle speakers for the Barometer Bar Show in Kyiv, which is one of the greatest bar shows that there is.
It's incredible.
It really is. But I've also been to more cities in Russia than most Russians. I've been to 14 cities, right? I've been going for years. Like, the Russian people don't want this. And I don't think there's any enmity between Ukrainian bartenders and Russian bartenders. We saw that at the show. They would welcome their Russian friends with open arms. Mm-hmm. There's hostility from country to country. But the normal people in Russia don't get to decide that because they don't have free and fair elections, right? There are 13,000 brave Russians locked up right now just for having protested the war in the last 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's, you know, it's kind of missed when people are pouring Smirnoff down the drain. It's like, nah, you need to go past the Ladybird book version of this. It's a little bit more complicated than that.
Yeah, I mean, any situation like this is, of course, going to have a lot of nuance and complications behind it. But man, it's been really unfortunate and shitty. And I've been, frankly, it's the 5 minute news cycle that we've been trapped in now for so many years. I feel like it started, you know, when we had the Trump administration take office, and then as that finally wound down, then we moved into the COVID, you know, surge, and now that seems like it's kind of winding down. And now all I can look at is the news about Ukraine and what's going on with Russia. It's just taxing. It's really taxing.
Yeah, that got dark really quickly. I think we either now need to talk about stand-up comedy and jiu-jitsu, or, you know, throw in a fucking State Farm line. But you know what it is? This is part of the world. You know, there have been wars around the world that have gone on, and we didn't give a shit, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't True. Emphasized in the media. We didn't care. There's been war in Ukraine for 5 years already, actually, in the East. And there's hostilities in lots and lots of places. You can drive yourself mad, but, you know, I'll be Pollyanna here and say, even with all of this going on, and you look back, let's not even look back 100 years. Let's look back 50 years, 50 years, and think of a marginalized group, right? A traditionally, historically marginalized group. There's never been a better time to be alive. There's still a lot of work to do. But if you look at where we are now, I think we can be fairly happy. And we can sort of say, you know how far we've come? We got lots of work to do, but we should feel a little good about the fact that, you know, we're in a world where the average life expectancy goes up every year. The number of live childbirths goes up every year. Diseases have been eradicated. Yeah, we got war, but we always had war. We got less war now than ever. Mm-hmm. So I think there's something, you know, can be a little bit happy about that. You don't need to drown your sorrows.
Sure. If you look at it like a stock chart, we're ticking in the right direction. That is for certain. It's, you know, still it captures my attention, and it keeps me keeps me on edge. But I'm not the Pollyanna of the show. That would be Damon's department.
Yeah, we've got large ice cubes and coupe glasses. You know, it's an interesting time to be alive.
I can actually hear the protesters chanting outside the studio now. Yeah. You know, they've got the tiki torches and everything, you know. And then there's a counter-protesting group saying, no, you should be free to put ice cubes in coops.
Yeah. You know? Jeez. A big, giant, square ice cube ice cube in a coupe glass. That is the most frustrating thing visually that I see on Instagram.
There are very fine people on both sides, Souther.
I've yet to visit a bar that served me that or served anyone that. I've not seen that in a bar. I've only seen it in photographs on Instagram. And I just think that's what it is. It's photographs. It's not a real thing.
Well, yes, because when you try and pour a drink around that, you can pour exactly 1.5 ounces of whatever it is that you're serving into that glass before it's like full. So then you put your little edible flower or whatever on top. You snap a picture. You take the glass, the cube out of the glass. You fill the rest of it up and you drink it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the game.
I thought that straws and coupe glasses, I thought that was as bad as it was going to get, you know?
And then, did you guys have the thing with the straw outside the V-shaped martini glass? Did you ever do that in the US?
Oh, that
certainly. No, yeah. So, the little tiny swizzle straws. Yes.
Yeah. You get the stir straw and you'd like dip it in the drink and then stick it on the outside of the V-shaped martini. And it would stick to it because you were a mixologist. Yeah. In like 1993.
Yeah.
Part mixologist, part magician.
Same thing.
The magic of physics. Yeah, exactly. I know. Where does magic end and mixology begin? I don't know. I simply don't.
Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
That's right. I love that quote. Indistinguishable to the viewer. I think that's what we've got with this cube. Especially the cube. I can almost wrap my mind around the sphere in the coupe glass. But when you see a 2x2 cube standing up like some kind of lazily proud iceberg, you know, it's not even floating. It's sitting because there's not enough liquid to lift it.
It's literally a square peg in a round hole. What do you think, right?
You got it.
Souther Teague is a sphere fundamentalist.
Yes, I am a sphere dementalist.
You're stuck in the past, Souther. Come on, join us in the future where we have self-driving Teslas and apparently self-erasing accident histories if you were State Farm.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm here with you in the future. We're in three different rooms in two different cities, broadcasting a radio show that's a podcast as well. Like, I mean, we are the future. Come on. So Philip, where can we find your show? You said it's on Spotify because of the big bidding war, and hopefully everywhere, but your other show, it's Philip, it's just called Philip Duff on YouTube. Am I correct?
Yeah, and it's got some cool shit on there that I'd forgotten. Like, I used to stick stuff up on YouTube, and then I was like, this YouTube thing's never going to work out. But the stuff there
TikTok,
dating
man.
Back.
It's all about TikTok.
That's it. Follow. Duff Talk is very popular. but no, there's a couple of things on there that are actually really fucking funny. One was also more than 10 years ago, because I wasn't even living here full time then. I was flying backwards and forwards for 3 weeks, every 3 weeks, to date Mrs. Elaine Duff, as is now. As you might guess from her surname, it worked out. But there there used to be a service, and you could choose these like cartoon avatars. And you could choose the setting, you know, a bar, the beach or whatever. And you could type their dialogue and they would speak it. So there's two actual instructional cartoons there. One is called Off-Duty Bartender Walks Into a Bar. That's got like 28,000 views. And the other one, maybe a little closer to my heart because my day job with Liquid Solutions is helping brands connect with the on-premise and education and stuff like that, is Off-Duty Brand Manager Walks Into a Bar. So I'm going to big up those oldies out of the archive on my YouTube, which you can find with Philip Duff, because I do think they still stand the test of time. I get people messaging me on a semi-regular basis saying, oh my God, so funny. I wanted to use it to train my managers or train my brand managers or even my directors, but you know, you said fuck a few times too many in the cartoon, which does hint strongly that there's an acceptable number of times you can say fuck for a director level training. I don't know what it is, clearly, but, you know, it must be out there. So, yeah, those are there, and I'll be adding stuff, and I'll make a bit more noise when I start interviewing people. This guy called me the other day because he'd seen the podcast, and he wanted to get on it to promote his own podcast. He's American. His name's Joe Rogan. Have you guys heard of him? He seemed nice, but, like, a little needy, and I want to help people out, right? But not... if he's not going to commit to his own podcast. Like, he could stop this thing after a while. And also, he did want to talk about jiu-jitsu more than was comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a bit of a blowhard, though. He's long-winded. Those shows go a little bit long for me. Well, cool. Easy to find you on YouTube. I'm scrolling through the videos you have up there now. It's just Philip Duff, your name. That's Philip with one L, Duff with two. You're pretty easily found on Instagram as well. Old Duff Geneva, all spelled out, right? Got any other things you want to plug so people can find you and listen to you and see you doing your thing?
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're really old, I'm on Twitter. That's Philip Duff, at PHILIPDUFF. A single L Phillips are obviously in an elevated elite sphere. And also, it's kind of great being a single L Philip, because you get to see if people are paying attention. I imagine it's the same with you, Damon. You must get lots of people emailing you, you know, writing Damien,
David, Dylan.
Well, that's your brother, right? Get that.
But yeah.
Yeah, no, that's like Neil Bodenheimer, the owner of several prestigious bars in New Orleans. He's an N-E-A-L. Yeah, and right. if somebody gets it wrong, it doesn't mean they're a total dick, but... it's a clue. And if you're in your 40s, I'm on Instagram as Philip S. Duff. That's PHILIPS for Stephen, DUFF. Long story about that. And if you're on TikTok, well, you're listening to the wrong show, or you're snooping on your kids, right? And both of that is wrong. You're giving your data for free to the standing committee of the Chinese Communist Party. And that's not cool, although some of the dances are nice. So I don't know.
So all that was to say, you are not on TikTok. You know, I'm on there. I've yet to post anything, but I troll it every now and again and see what the trends are. But I've yet to leap into those waters. You know who's killing it over there? Our friend Sean Sewell up in Canada. He's made quite a splash on TikTok with his.
Sean has really dived in, and he's done, like, I think what it is, his most watched talk is him making a lemon drop.
Yep.
And I was on a podcast with Sean, and I'm like, dude, you might be the old-fashioned with Sprite girl of our generation. Like somebody might write an article like, whatever happened to Sean Sewell 10 years from now? Right. Like, and track you down. Although Sean is a very good mixologist. Like, demystify. Like, is everyone sitting, is Ryan Chetty-Ordana saying, fuck me, thank God Sean has demystified the lemon drop?
Yeah. Well, no, but you know who is saying that? People who make lemon drops, aka people who are on TikTok. I'm pretty sure that Venn diagram is just one circle right there.
Yeah, the total is complete eclipse overlap.
Yes.
But it is a bit like the porn star martini. Now you bring it up, Greg. Like, you've probably heard this thing that the porn star martini is the most popular cocktail in the world and it's the most searched for cocktail, right?
I've definitely heard that. Yes. I mean, I've heard it's the most searched. Most popular, I don't know about that. Margarita?
It's in the UK. So I knew Douglas Ankrah, who created it. I've even been to the strip club in Cape Town it was named after first, because it was originally called a Maverick Martini, because Douglas was down there opening Lab Bar Cape Town with my dear friend Kurt Schlechter. And after a hard day's mixology, they would retire to a strip club just to read the articles, obviously.
Of course.
So he went back to London and he invented this cocktail. And he called it a Maverick Martini, and no one ordered it. Like, nobody. And they renamed it a Porn Star Martini. It became a huge hit. Mega. Mm. And then, you know, cocktails moved on. They became less about fruit and citrus and more about Amaros. You probably know a little about this, Souther. Mm. All good. Much like the Espresso Martini, though, it has surged back. When you're in the UK or Australia, it's insane. Every supermarket has its own branded porn star martini. They even sold porn star martinis in the American bar of the Savoy Hotel. Wow. They had to put it on the register as passion martini because they couldn't say porn in, apparently you can't say porn in the Savoy. But it's off the charts. It really, really is. Wait a second. How did I wind up talking about the porn star martini? I said it's like the porn star martini. What was I talking about?
Lemon drops. We were talking about TikTok and how we're all, you know, suddenly uncool now.
No, it was search terms. What it was, I'm going out on a limb here, maybe it was Aaron Goldfarb, but he researched this thing. What it was, several years ago, Google changed their search algorithms, and especially the autocomplete, right, to kind of downrank porn.
Mm.
So before, if you started, you could be typing in porn star rear-ended State Farm, and you know, you'd get the results you got. But now, if you type in porn star, it auto completes porn star martini. So lots of people wind up searching for a porn star martini who didn't particularly want a drink, if you see what I mean.
Right.
So therefore, it's
they're overwhelmed with curiosity when it popped up, so they had to see it through.
They're like, I'm here anyway. I might as well have a look. Yeah. But no, that's why it is the most searched for cocktail. It is a, forgive the phrase, a more vanilla version of what you might search for if the first two words of your search term were porn star.
Mm. Wow.
Hmm.
That's pretty incredible.
You learn something new every week on this show.
Well, right? You learn something new every time you have a conversation with Philip Duff. That's for sure. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, man. I really appreciate you taking time out to talk to us about your new endeavors with the podcast and the new videos you're going to be posting up on YouTube, which I can't wait for. I don't know. You're a fascinating presenter when you're on stage, and I love to see you up there. So I'll be happy to see some videos on your YouTube. And then of course, you know, we're always raising a glass of old Duff Genever. So really, really appreciate you being on the show with us.
No, it's great to be back, man. I mean, I remember the halcyon heydays of recording this in Roberta's.
Yeah,
with pizza, hot, fresh pizza all around.
Oh, my stomach literally just contracted. Like, it's a whole thing. We'll get back to that one of these days. Sure. And it's looking like I might even be able to bend an elbow with Damon next week, which would be awesome. I didn't know you were that close. I knew you were, like, somewhere in California.
I would come find you. Like, if you're in this state, I'll meet you wherever. But you're gonna be very close by, so that's great.
Yeah, they kind of lock us away in the lodge at Tiburon, mm-hmm. and try to make sure we can't get. It's like a very nice prison camp,
luxury hostel.
It's like Damon. I think he must have bought Bitcoin in like 1991 or something. It's so rich. If you go to the local supermarket and buy two bananas, a bag of pasta, and a Red Bull, it's like $900, right? It's absurd. Do you know who Steve Beale is?
That name sounds familiar. Oh.
So he was one of the original whiskey masters from Diageo. He's amazing. And me and him were judging last year, and he was telling us about Tiburon. He's like, let me tell you about Tiburon, which is right there. He does private whiskey tastings for, you know, very wealthy people, and he's got all the best whiskey in the world, and he knows how it's made. He could equally well be a distiller. And this dude, has any of you ever fucked up your foot or your leg and you have to wear that orthopedic boot?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was for the dude who invented the boot. Oh, so he's rich. He's rich. And of course he lives in Tiburon. Of course he does. He's got this like massive kind of mountaintop mansion with wraparound windows. And Steve's giving the whiskey tasting and all this kind of thing. And everyone's, you know, like when you're the bartender at an event, you might be living with four roommates in Bushwick, but everyone wants to be your friend. And everyone's talking to Steve. And this one particular guy gets on very well with him. And he's like, hey, Steve, you're a nice guy. You ever go to Hawaii? And Steve, who lives in California, he's like, oh, yeah, I go to Hawaii. He says, well, dude, let me know. Next time you come, you can put your plane in my hangar.
sounds like an offer one cannot refuse.
Steve told me that, and I get it. Because believe it or not, those hangar fees can really mount up. Right? So that was a very generous offer. And that's what Tiburon is like.
I'll tell you, there's a thrift store in Tiburon. It's called Tiburon Thrift Store. Very creative. It's open 3 days a week for only 3 hours. And it's what The Real Real is based on. Oh, it is not. Is it
like lightly used Porsches?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You can buy a Rolex for about $100 less than what it costs brand new. You know, it's right. Yeah, it's in all the secondhand clothing is still in the stores. It's still this season. You know, it's like that kind of place. It's gnarly. There's like four restaurants in Tiburon and they're all caviar centric. You know, it's pretty crazy.
So actually that one place does do a great caviar lunch, right? That place on the main street opposite the bar with the deck.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the,
oh my God.
I think it's called California Caviar Company or something like that. Mm-hmm. But not Russian caviar, because we're not today, doing maybe. That right now.
No, we only want top quality caviar from Iran. Right. Like, whoever thought Iran would be the preferred option? We are in topsy-turvy land here, and everybody is scrabbling to get out the fucking atlases. Where is Ukraine anyway? I'm going to have some chicken Kiev. Like, it's a whole thing. The big irony, just to bring it back to politics, because, you know, I'm in this bidding war with Spotify and they like a bit of edginess. Most Russians who moved to America, largely to escape persecution of one form or another, they were actually from the Ukraine. Ukraine's a very, very, very big part of the former USSR. And they're like, well, nobody knows where Ukraine is. So they opened restaurants called the Russian this or the Russian that. But they're Ukrainian, and people are now boycotting those restaurants.
Right.
Oh, my God.
And that's what's fucked up.
Dang.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still hungry after that talk, so maybe it's time to cook it so much. I'm going to have some chicken Kiev on a pizza now. That's what's happening for lunch today for me.
Right on.
After this show.
Beets on a pizza. Yeah. Going to Veselka's and just buying them out of their stock.
Oh, man. Well, Phil, when you're here, yeah, definitely hit me up so we can grab a drink together. I'd love that. And is Elaine going to be with you?
I have the best news. I get that question a lot, believe it or not. Yes. Yes, my gorgeous 6-foot-tall American wife will be with me.
Nice.
We're judging together. Yeah, we normally do a thing. And we either try to kind of break out of the very genteel prison camp at least one evening. And last year's was when our dear friend Julio Bermejo drove over the bridge and came and took us to Isaac Shumway's incredible bar, California Gold, which had just reopened. Yes. And it's such a cool place. We even bumped into that Californian legend himself, Reza Ismaili, who was, of course, drinking Guinness at the bar. So maybe we'll do that again. Just to come back to how rich this area is, Julio Bermejo, the inventor of the Tommy's Margarita, mm-hmm. He's like, okay, Phil. He's like, I'll pick you up at 7:00. Be out front, because as a brown guy, I will almost certainly get stopped by the cops in Tiburon, right? Just because he wasn't driving a McLaren.
Right.
Like, that's how rich it is there. I love it. I love it. I feel at home. And after the Spotify deal kicks in, or maybe not if they keep lowballing me, you know, I'll just get a, you know, a place there, just a little six bedrooms, pool, helicopter little pad, that kind of thing. A little pied-à-terre. Bolt hole.
Awesome. Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing you too. And can't wait. And thanks again for being on the show today. This has been, as always, ton of fun, lots of laughs. It's always great. So, yeah, thanks again. And thanks for tuning in to the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. Be sure to go to our website and click on the beating heart to donate to the station. Keep us going. And keep, you know, keep your eyes out for any Teslas. Don't run red lights.
Yeah.
Get State Farm insurance. Yeah. Apparently, it takes care of literally everything. You'll never remember those incidents you were in.
It's like it never happened.
All right. Till next week. Cheers, y'all.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers, everyone.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to the Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.